Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Time to bring the bass back.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to this week's episode of the Temple of Hoop podcast. I'm your co-host, Coach Maples, aka J Mapes, here as always with Kings. Kings, what's going on, my bro?
Yes, sir, man. You know, feeling good. Busy, swamp, but we're going to get through it.
Dr. Kings, man. Dr. Kings on the way.
On the way, man. Hopefully.
Yeah, we got a few things to talk about tonight. Let's start with the Utah Jazz. Mm-hmm. Man, so back-to-back, Ross was on the road, gave up 20-point leads. I think we both said it before the season. It might be time to pack them up. We actually did say it's time to pack them up.
Yep.
They just absolutely fold their last couple of games. One time, give the 20-point lead to the Warriors. And then earlier in the week, did the same thing to the Clippers, back-to-back on the road, 20-point L's. We both feel like it's time for this whole thing to die. They're holding on for dear life. My suggestion was to move Rudy and Mitchell, because that is not a free agency destination. Stack those picks and try to Memphis that thing, bro. Let Nikhil Alexander Walker, you know, shoot you to the number one pick of the 2024 NBA draft, baby. And then and go from there. So where are you with this Jazz team? I know you have some things you want to get off your chest with them.
Yeah, man. I mean, we still have people this year still hanging on to the Rudy slander that, you know,
it's not him.
That the wise folk have given up already a while ago, because you actually watch them defend, bro. Like, we had people, you know, talk about he's more of a liar. Like, I propose, first of all, that Rudy goes to the Mavericks. I think he fits what they want to do on both ends of the floor very, very well. But you have people talk about he's a liability. I'm like, what is he a liability at? He's a liability at things he should not be doing. Like, he shouldn't be a perimeter defender. That's not his role.
I have some data on that when you're done. That's
his yeah, no, and that's a point. Like, he actually does better than
what I'm saying.
But I'm sorry he can't bail out all the piss poor perimeter defenders that Utah has. Like, I'm sorry he can't do that. He is a all-time drop defender. I mean, you saw how important Brooke Lopez's drop was to the Milwaukee Bucks defensive scheme. So to act like, you know, because he can't, you know, sit down on the outside, Like he's a Ron Artest in his prime, or Meta World Peace in his prime on the Indiana Pacers. Like, I'm sorry, he can't do that, but that's not his role. His job is supposed to be a drop defender. He's supposed to position himself in the inside, get rebounds, box out, which he does at a high level, do all the dirty work in terms of screening, positioning, sealing guys off, which he does at a high level. And then when he gets to the outside on the perimeter, he's supposed to compete as best as he can, which he does. The other guys are supposed to be able to rotate. The other guys are supposed to be able to box out. The other guys are supposed to know how to do help side defense. And the other guys are supposed to stay in front of their man. They don't do that. That's not his fault. Like, that is not Rudy Gobert's fault. But you know who can do that? Finney Smith, Spencer Dinwiddie, Brunson, Reggie Bullock, and Luka Doncic this year has decided to play defense. They can do that in Dallas. And you know what else they can do in Dallas? They can make an entry pass that Donovan Mitchell doesn't seem to want to do whenever he plays with Rudy Gobert. I know there was an interesting stat somebody said. Somebody said Trae Young has more assists to Clint Capella than Donovan Mitchell has passes to Rudy Gobert this season.
Yeah, did you see the average number of passes? Well, I'll go to the average number of passes he makes to. So Donovan Mitchell, with his usage rate the way it is, he averages two passes a game to Rudy Gobert.
It's unbelievable.
With the amount of screens that he sets in pick and roll, that's when he passes the averages to Rudy Gobert. I think that highlight was very damning last night when Rudy had the guard buried underneath the basket, and nobody threw the ball to him. They just
it was Clay.
And I think,
and you know the funny that, and that's the thing, that's not new.
Yeah, like, a lot of Jazz fans who they said that's a normal occurrence game to game.
Our mutual Brick has been saying that for the past 2 years. He says that Donovan Mitchell can't make an entry pass to Rudy Gobert for whatever reason. He's been telling me that for the past 2 years, and it just gets worse and worse. I don't know, because Donovan wants to be on his way out and go to New York, but I mean, Rudy Gobert, for what he does, is very, 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 very good. And I think on a team like Dallas that has cheaper contracts and, you know, has good role players that they don't want to overpay, they found a guy in Reggie Bullock who can do what THJ does for a fraction of the price. You know what I'm saying? I think for them and what they run, like, I just think it makes more sense to pay a guy like Rudy to come in there, be the screen guy for Luka. Luka will easily get Rudy 18 points a game on 70% shooting, because he doesn't know how to make entry passes. He doesn't know how to throw a lob. You know what I'm saying? And Rudy Gobert can actually clean up. Like, you know, like, Dallas does a good job of staying in front of their man, staying on a string, competing on the outside. Add Rudy Gobert to that, man, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to be able to score on those guys, because now if they do make a mistake, you do get by them. Now you got to deal with that. And if you want to take, you know, Rudy out the paint and try and think you can take away the rim protection, we have Finney Smith, who's a great guy at you know, positioning, getting in. You also have Luka, who's also great at coming down there and using their length to to bother guys at the rim. So it's not going to be like Utah, where you take out Rudy and now nobody's there to help. Nah, Dallas got some guys who are going to come down in there and make it tough for you. So it's going to be real team defense with Rudy, and he's going to improve them on both ends of the floor. And, you know, I'll talk a little bit more why I like that move, because this kind of goes into my whole notion of where team building is heading towards.
Oh yeah, we got a whole topic.
So I'll save that for why I think it makes sense, because I know what people are saying. Well, Rudy's not a real star. They need a real star. No, they don't actually need it. If you actually look at NBA, no, they don't actually need it. They don't. But we'll get into that later. But yeah, and then in terms of Donovan, man.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Where do you feel on the Donovan Mitchell side?
Send that bro to New York and let him learn the hard way. Like, I mean, he thinks he's going to, you know, he wants to do it for his brand. So salute to him. He wants to get his brand up, whatever. But, I mean, enjoy it, bro. It's like, you know, that hunting big markets, not caring about the fit, not caring about the hoop stuff. It's not, I mean, if your goal is outside hoop, I get it. But if your goal is to try and be successful, hoop, good luck. You know what I mean? That's all I have to say for you.
And I'm crying because all the stuff he don't do now, your team's going to make him do it there, the defense and moving the ball.
All I know is, you know, if the Utah Jazz and New York Knicks need cat filling, Russell Westbrook is available.
That's what I'm saying. I think New York is really an undercover destination for Westbrook if that happens, just for the future ramifications.
I really don't think he will be. I think the Utah Jazz trade Donovan in New York, I think the Lakers, if they really were aggressive, can come in and say make a three team where you send D Mitch to New York. The Lakers will now send the expiring contract to Utah, because you know the New York Knicks got guys on 2 year deals left, so you can send Russell Westbrook's expiring, and then the Lakers can take Alec Burke, the Evan Fournier, the Mitchell Robinson type of longer-term deals that the Jazz wouldn't want. The Jazz can just eat Russell's contract for a year and then take New York's first and then take the Lakers second.
I just want to let you know, you're sending Russ to Utah. You know he got beef with them fans, man.
I mean, they can pay him to stay home. It's only a year. They'll be tanking. They'll be tanking anyway. I mean, they'll be tanking anyway.
So here's my thing with going back to the Utah and the whole drama situation. My pendulum on Rudy has swung. Just the more I dive deep into it, he used to be really bad on switches. So that narrative sticks. He suddenly became an excellent hedge out and switch defender. He just does everything on defense elite. The issue is, if you watch the Utah Jazz, is Rudy cannot punish teams for going small on the other end. So they're able to pull him out in space, and he just can't score on smaller guys. And that's why they pull him out in space, no rim protection. They take advantage of Utah's bad defenders. So that's the issue with giving him, you know, damn near a supermax. To your point, with Luka on the team, your offense isn't going to struggle. So I see why you think the Dallas Mavericks are a good fit. So I get that. So I think that's the issue of Rudy Gobert, is that when teams go small to eliminate him offensively, to eliminate him defensively, he can't punish them on the other end. I think you saw that. We saw that in the Clippers series. But defensively, you saw when he was on the floor, when they played a center, he was dominant. Well, that's it. They went up 2-0. He was dominant. But say like tonight, I was watching the Pelicans-Jazz game. Pelicans play small ball. You know, Zubac has 14 and 10 at halftime. You know what I mean? It's like you got to rethink your whole strategy there because he's just killing you inside. I don't think Gobert has that offensively. You know, Zubac's got good touch, good footwork. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you play small, he's going to kill you. I just don't think Gobert has that. Like that's the last step to his game. And so you can't eliminate him offensively or defensively, excuse me.
I think where you can make him functional, and this is the issue that Utah has, because nobody knows how to make an entry pass on that team apparently. Like, you know, Rudy Gobert is not a guy you can just dump in. He's gonna get right position. He's gonna use his footwork to get to the seat. He's a guy where he seals if he has an opening, you have to hit him immediately. Or he's a guy where you have to use your dribble breakdown to draw in his defender to create, which is what Luka
would. You can't hit him on the run.
Yeah, you can't hit him and say, hey, go beat that guy 1-1. Nah, you have to
right. You
have to spoon feed him, or you have to catch him where he's worked his butt off to get good positioning, and then he just catch, you know, one drop step, finish.
Right.
Like, so it requires a good passer, requires a willing passer, and Utah doesn't have that right now. Right. Their best was Joe Ingles.
Yeah. Right. And then on the Donovan side of it, I think we just seen it, man. It's hard for players to kind of pretend when they don't want to be somewhere, man, or they don't you know, vibe with a teammate. I mean, this is apparently clear that him and Rudy that's had some issues beyond the hoop court. And obviously, I think we've always seen guys say the right things, are professional in the media, but it kind of always finds a way to show itself. And it's like your highest usage player making two passes a game to your starting center, who is a very effective role guy, provides vertical spacing. Like, that's alone says a lot right there. You know what I mean? So I think you just – I don't know. Why do you think, on a side note, real quick, so why do you think these guys just linger in these places they know they don't want to be?
I mean, like, I told you.
Because he already signed his max. So that's why, like, I'm like, all right, you're locked in. Like, so why? So why do you think that?
My thing is with the, but if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, but Rudy, I mean, that Donovan didn't sign his extension to this past summer, right?
Let me double check that right now. You keep going off with double checking right now.
Yeah, because if he didn't do it to his past summer, remember, I was telling you, that's the new thing now. I was telling you, where you sign your big contract because you know you get more money when you sign with the team that drafted you, and then you demand the trade. Where it's like, you can leave in free agency, sure, but you're going to get significantly less. You talk about much like over 10 M's less per year almost. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, nah, they're not going to pass that up. You definitely want to stay with your team, sign that contract, and then tell them, hey, I want out of here. You know, so that's why I'm not shocked. And I think he signed that extension in this past offseason, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, he signed it November 2020, but I think it didn't kick in.
So it didn't kick in, right, until this offseason. Yeah. So this offseason is when it – so this is the first year of his contract, which makes sense why you're now hearing he wants out. Like, it's exactly what I anticipate a lot of these younger guys would do. Get the most money you can and then ask out.
That's what I think would also be letting it – not necessarily have to do with him, but – you know, they were that number one seed, and he didn't get all NBA. So he had a 163 mil base, which would have hopped to 195 if he makes all NBA. And they were a one seed, and he was a leading scorer and didn't make any of the three all NBA teams, remember?
Yeah. Yeah, he got hurt by that one. He was hot. I know he was hot.
Yeah, so
that he was trying to milk Utah for all he could get.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens to Utah. But I think we both agree, man, it's time to go. I think the smart way is to, for Utah, it's not a free agent hotbed. You know, cash those two in, truckload of picks, and then, you know, start from the bottom, you know, start from scratch. Even if, you know, either Quinn's your guy or he isn't, I think, you know, he's kind of run his course there. They max it out. They got that one seed, didn't do it that year with those injuries, man.
And you know, what you just said is exactly why I think Russ is a great destination for a three-team trade, because it's like, you know, you go to New York, they have, like I said, they have those multi-year deals with those actually good, decent vets that will win you games you're not supposed to win. And, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, With Russ, you get a guy who you don't have to play. He's only 1 year left on his deal, and your Lakers can give you maybe one first or a second because you know you're going to get your first from the New York Knicks. And it's like, man, it's the easiest way for the Lakers to get off Russ's contract is to call up Utah, tell Utah to send Donnie to New York where he wants to go. Utah will get their picks. They'll get their expiring contract, so they won't be on the book for anything. And it's a win. It's a win-win for everybody. Like that's, right. That three-team trade is a win-win for everybody. There's no reason why it shouldn't happen, but because it's so logical, I just don't expect the Lakers to go through with it because it's just too logical for them to do it. You know what I mean? So it's like, but that's a great trade, I think, because that's the team Donnie wants to play for. He wants to go to the Knicks. You know, the Knicks want to make
it. CAA.
And the Knicks want to make that splashy, you know, trade for a young star that they're going to use to try and pair Zion. Look, all hell will break loose when Zion signed that extension. He said, I want to trade you. I hope it don't come to that point, but that's what it's looking like. Milk the team for as much money as possible and then demand a trade when it go wrong.
Well, it looks like the Pelicans are actually trying to steer the ship in the right direction. So at least they're trying to make it hard now. So we'll see what happens going forward.
I feel like Zion will do that thing where like we'll give it a year, see where it goes.
Yeah, so we'll see.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Moving on, the team that made a comeback against the Jazz, Klay and Poole, went crazy for the Warriors in that comeback. Klay couldn't make anything in the first half, made everything the second half, finished with 36. Poole finished with 30. It was just a special dynamic duo performance while Utah just crumbled. On the flip side of that, they did announce that Steph was not going to play anymore in the regular season, going to try to get it going in the playoffs. Man, so the Warriors are hanging on to that three by a thread. Trying to keep Dallas off.
I honestly feel like they should get the four.
We'll see. I'm trying to think about. So let's discuss this. Just bringing Steph in cold turkey in the playoff games, and right now where they're set up, the series is going to be hard regardless. You're going to end up with likely Denver or Minnesota if they can, you know, get on a hot run these last four games. It's probably Denver right now. What I'm looking at right now. How do you feel about Steph just coming back cold turkey right into, you know, playoff atmosphere basketball? He is a 10 plus year vet. So there's that, but how in general do you feel about him coming injury into, you know, high leverage basketball?
I don't feel worried at all because of teams who would play as Denver and Utah, and he'll fry those dudes on the drop. So I don't, that'll actually be a perfect tune-up series for him to get back into shape. But the reason I say I think the Warriors should actually want the four, because look who you get in the first round. Utah is completely dysfunctional. You get Utah in the first round, that's completely dysfunctional. And then you go to the second round, who do you get? You get the team you actually match up well with, the Phoenix Suns. Like, you get the team that you actually match up with in round two that you can use as your way to really, you know, work on all your playoff adjustments, go to war with a battle-tested playoff contender that you actually can match up well with, and get all your guys ready for one of the teams you don't match up well with, one of it being the Grizzlies or the other one being the more revamped physical Dallas Mavericks. So that's why I'm like, if you're the Warriors, you probably want the four seed, because that's the easiest way for you to get to the finals, because now you avoid your bad matchups until the Western Conference Final, so you can work on everything you need to work on all the favorable matchups, and then you get to the Western Conference Final, and then you go to war. The last thing you want to do is go into the second round and play a Memphis Grizzlies or a Dallas Mavericks and go seven-game series right before you play a Phoenix Suns, who probably just had an easy walk through all the way to the Western Conference Final. Now the team if you do survive, which is not very likely, you know, now you have to play a team that probably was, you know, recharged, that you probably gave your all. Draymond probably sacrificed his body and all that type of stuff to keep those, you know, physical bigs and physical wings out the paint. And it's like, now you have to go play Ayton and them after you gave your all playing teams that you didn't match up with. So if you're the Golden State Warriors, do not be upset if you're the 4 seed. You probably want the 4 seed. That's what I'm looking at. I was like, that's probably what you want right.
Yeah, I think that's sound on the outside, but I think with the coaching staff who's been there, and then those big three who's battle tested, I don't think they care.
They don't care.
Their whole vibe all season was, especially late after that hot start, just let us get to the playoffs healthy.
Well, yeah, they didn't
push Draymond at all. They're not going to push Steph at all. They definitely, you know, held Klay out as long as possible. Klay had to like itch to fight to get back. You know, when he did, they were still trying to take it slow. They just want to get healthy, and the Warriors feel like they can win anywhere just because of their championship pedigree, which is how most champions think. You know what I mean? So it doesn't surprise me. But I think your theory was sound, though. I think the 4 seed definitely offers better matchups for them. Like you said, Denver, just because – actually, hold up, timeout. I forgot. With Denver beating the Lakers today, Denver jumped to 5. And now Utah 6. So right now they actually will play Utah if it happened. So right now they're set up with Utah, which I agree is a better matchup for them, given the schematic, how it works schematically, and with the dysfunction going on in Utah. So just for the record, your Timberwolves are 1.5 behind. So we'll see how that goes. Utah's 4-6 their last 10 games. So we'll see how that works these last 4 games. But I think what you said, Darius, on the way you described the map is fine. But I just don't think the Warriors care. They just want to get healthy. But that's tough, man. It's giving me shades of 2016, you know, when they were lighting it up. And then Steph got hurt, remember? And then he came back against Portland, you know, did the I'm here, I'm back. But then you saw in the finals, you know, can't get by Kevin Love. You know what I mean? Like it's just whenever you get something like that late in the season, you just never know. Like when it'll flare up again, or when it'll show itself. So we'll see, man. We just got to see him run, right? What'd you say?
They didn't have a Jordan Poole back then.
That's right. Like I said, and I also want to say thank you for bringing that up, because I want to say this. I think more so me. I think we both kind of had a little bit of doubt about Jordan Poole earlier in the year. He's completely shut that down for me. Yep. I complete faith in him as a number two shot creator. He has the quote unquote the goods.
He is what they look like.
Yes, exactly. That's what they say. He is what they look like. So Jordan Poole has completely silenced my doubt as a number two shot creator on a contender. He's for sure got it. They definitely have some decisions to make this offseason. I know they're not going to add another $25 million contract to that. So I think your boy might be.
Oh no, Wiggins is for sure gone. But yeah. I think even Morris talking, it's a possibility they might move one in the court.
Yeah, I think, and honestly, I think it might the way that I got that some too from guys. It might more so be Klay than Drake.
No. That's what I was doing.
Because a little bit of insider info. Somebody I really trust. You know, they approached Klay about coming off the bench to keep Poole starting, and Klay was like, "Hell no." So like that happened. Like that's what somebody I 100% trust. So there's definitely a little bit of angst there, depending how this season, you know, turns out. So we'll see what happens from there.
And Dre's been revitalized. He's too key to them on both ends of the floor. As bad as his offense can be at times, he knows their system in and out offensively, knows how to pass that guys up, and he's an all-time defender. One of the top five we've ever seen in hoop. So it's like he can't go just based off, like, he's too much of a utility guy for them to be right. Let go. So as good as Klay is shooting wise, you know, he's taken enough of a step back on his shooting and defense to where you can now actually find a guy to fill his role. Right. As crazy as that sounds.
Right. It is crazy. You know, Klay mess around and, you know, shoot 48% three the whole playoff run. They'll say, forget it. We'll foot the bill and just
try. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, that is possible.
And so we'll see what happens. So we both share some sentiments on this online regarding team building in the past. So I'm asking you, the Nets and the Lakers completely bought into the three stars model full on in these past couple off seasons. The Nets actually had a lot of good pieces I liked, you know, flip those to get James Harden. The Lakers traded all of their role players for Westbrook.
Who was going to come back and hurt him?
Yeah. So I remember the pods around that Nets trade. I remember we both were like, are we sure KD and Kai and those players isn't enough? I think we both asked the same question. And obviously what the Lakers did to acquire Westbrook, which we both said before it even happened, was like, why him? Because of the fit. And it's been a predictable disaster.
You were gonna be cheap. Why you could have just got DeRozan, man?
Yeah, right. Just give yourself an excuse with the hard cap. But right. So some people agree. I got a lot of pushback. I think the concept of team building is going to change, and I think teams are going to be leaning more into two stars in depth than these big three models, and that's kind of how I feel. I know the one I mentioned can be more expensive because you have a lot of really good players. The market tends to overpay them, so the tax bill gets high. I think that's why a lot of teams prefer the three big guys, and you can fill it out with minimums and mid levels, right? But I just think the LeBrons, KDs, those are once in a lifetime talents, and every team just doesn't get to touch those. So I think teams are going to be putting a lot more stock into the draft, try to, you know, if they are really bad, hit those on those top five picks, try to find great talent, and then try to supplement those guys with really good players instead of fishing for, you know, the big ones. So how do you feel about that, you know, change going back? It used to be that way. I think it's kind of going back. It would be going back, actually. It's going back to that. It's not really a change.
You know why we're having this conversation? The salary cap giveth and taketh away. That's why we're having this conversation. The salary cap is the reason why all these big three teams are mid. When you get all those big contracts, you can't sign anybody else. You just can't. You don't have enough money. And then, you know, in contrast, you know, the soft cap, if you have two stars, it allows you to retain all the other guys, but then you have to pay a big luxury tax bill, which, again, is why I keep saying to all these people, stop having a salary cap. It's not going to help you. Just let whoever want to spend. Like, that's really just what it is, because at the end of the day, they're going to spend anyway. So just let them spend without the luxury tax bill. But I get it. You know, teams don't want to win. They got to eat. So it's like, yeah, we're going to split that luxury tax evenly. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's when you had those big threes and you look at all the big threes that have won over the years, what have they always had? They've always had, outside of the Celtics in 2008. And even then, you know, you can argue about KG being how all time he was. But all those big threes, a lot of them have always had a completely top 10 all time player. You look at the Spurs, they had Duncan. Look at the Warriors, you had, even when KD wasn't there, you had Curry, who's borderline top 10. Then when KD came there, you had arguably two borderline top 10s, KD, Curry. Then you had in the Heat, you had a top 20 guy in Wade. Then you had obviously LeBron, who arguably the greatest ever.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? You go to even just before that, even then in the 80s, when you go to like Bird, McHale and them, you had, you know what I mean? That's Bird, top 10 all time, arguably. You know, McHale, top 25, top 30 type all-time guy. Then you obviously go to the Lakers, Kareem, Magic, two arguably top five all-time. You know what I mean? It's like, right, these are, like you said, the greatest ever. Like, you basically have to draft LeBron and KD for this big three thing to most likely work in your favor, because like you said, you will be signing minimums.
Yeah, you gotta add that. You gotta hide that. You gotta hide that talent.
You had to hide. You have to be able to hide those minimums with all-time talent, because it's not going to be easy. And even in the cap, even the situation with the big three Cavs, even though it wasn't really a big three, they were able to get away being competitive, even though Love was underperforming, because they actually paid the bill to retain all the guys that they had there.
Yeah, so, I remember Gilbert put a hell of a bill.
Hell of a bill. It wasn't no mint. It wasn't no mint. And even then, it was hell for them to be able to win, because they had to compete against Golden State. So it's like, it's the cost benefit of paying for three stars, especially in today's era, because because the NBA talent is so.
I was just going there. I was just, that's great. I was just going there.
It's so close. Like, guys who get that nod, like, for example, B.I. is not going to get a certain type of contract because he doesn't have enough all-time. He doesn't have enough all-NBA teams as somebody else, like a LaVine or something, right?
Right.
Or a LaVine something. But, like, you pay a LaVine or you pay somebody like a DeMar who's going to be all-time. Like, let's say you paid them, like, the max contract, and then Brandon Ingram is a tier below. You just paid a guy who you could get another guy who's almost just as good and save like 15 to 20 mil a year. But because
he made all NBA,
because he made one all NBA, doesn't matter how good they actually are on the court, because he has a specific accolade or because he got, you know, these specific nods from the fan voting and all star, he's qualified for more money. So what you have is teams are paying max money to guys who are not real max players in terms of how much better they are than certain other players. So you're getting overpaid stars.
Yeah.
So because you have overpaid stars, that three-star model is even more expensive now than it was back then.
I'm laughing because I remember when Kemba got that All-NBA, was it over Clay, that last spot or whatever? Mm-hmm. I remember Clay was hot. And then I remember MJ, because Kemba's contract was going to be too high. Now, because MJ let him walk to Boston.
And then Boston paid them, what happened?
Yes.
like, come on. Like that. This is the reality of the NBA. Like, this is the reality of the NBA. It just takes one all-NBA team, and all of a sudden, you got an overpaid star. Like, that's really how the NBA functions. So that's why these three-star teams don't work, because these stars, you know, in comparison to the field and to their contract, are overpaid. Like, imagine you're paying Kemba Walker 30 mil, or the Knicks even paid him 20 mil, and you got someone like Jalen Brunson who's going to be capped out like 10 mil,
right?
The second round pick. You know what I'm saying? Like, these are like you. This is why it's not like these teams are going to be going towards the draft. This is why Scott, Presti saw that in OKC. He's like, I'm drafting because I need to be able to retain guys who flash here and there. Keep them under friendly contracts instead of overpaying for stars that at the end of the day, they're not really worth how much I paid them. You know why OKC is saying we might want to trade SGA, because SGA, for how much he's making compared to who he's competing against, might not be worth that. You know what I'm saying? Like that, like, let him go to another team that can pay them and let us save money and try to really draft a real superstar that we can actually build our team with, and not just a regular all-star.
I think that's what they want. I honestly think that's what they're waiting on, until they get a guy.
That's really it. Like, that's really the logic. I don't want to give an all-star superstar money when I could just draft a superstar. That's what it comes down to.
Right. Man. Yeah, I was really interested in what you thought about that. I'm with you on that. I think we both said we think it's crazy that the all-NBA teams have money tied to them. We both said that for like both 2 years now on this podcast. That next CBA is going to be really interesting. Really interesting, the next CBA. Because having money tied to this stuff, and not only that, I can hear the explanations of some of this stuff. I know these guys will be like, they got money tied to these idiots on TV. Like, shout out, Roz. I love black women on TV. But when you come on TV saying, Devin Booker overall importance to his team is not there. He's the offensive engine on a 60-win team. Like, there's no way you could go on TV and say stuff like that. Like, it's just very, very odd to me. But moving forward, man. Lastly, James Harden. So they won today because Embiid went absolutely bananas, but it was a struggle. I'm watching and I'm like, dude, that's why I looked it up. So his extension, a max extension for Harden is 4 years, $223 million. A lot of Sixer fans are like, hell no. And the other ones are like, well, we kind of have to because you're going to lose it for nothing. Where are you with that? I saw you gave a pretty a good explanation about why, how there's a way for him to be effective and why, you know, we have, I think you already can see that they have to do it. But you played the glass half full look at it by saying this way for still him to still get us 20 and be a top tier playmaker, which he still is. So I'll let you take it about Harden going for these next 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, we can all start off with one. It won't be as bad to the cap because they will get off Tobias Harris' contract. Number one, they will get off his contract. So they won't have to worry about retaining Max or anybody else. They will be able to get off the Tobias contract. And Morey is one of the best guys at getting guys on the margins. So you won't have to worry about whether you'll be able to field a competitive team. And also, if you talk about who's going to maximize Harden in terms of the scheme, Mike D'Antoni will coach the 76ers next season. You don't have to worry about that either. That's two things. As Philly fans, I know you hate to say it. I know you don't want to waste Embiid season, but I mean, this season was from the way Ben Simmons came in, the way Harden was looking, and not unsure of what he wanted in his life right now. It was always going to be a wash for you this season. But you know what? There's light at the end of the tunnel. You got a decent future. You hit on draft picks in terms of Thybul, who's a good defender for you to build with going forward.
Maxey is nice.
Tyrese Maxey, who you know is going to be a dynamic guard for you to be that third guy off Embiid and Harden. So you can take pressure off those guys going forward, especially after a playoff run and another offseason of development. And it's like, you know, you're going to get off Tobias Harris, so you're going to have cap space to be able to add guys on the margins and add true shooters and 3-and-D guys that can fit. You might be able to, you know, I think Morey will be able to hit on a guy who can replicate that Seth Curry production from three. You saw Dallas how was able to revitalize Reggie Bullock. I think the 76ers can make a move like that where they'll get a nice little shooting wing for them to add on. And they'll be off Danny Green's contract as well, so they'll probably replace him with a much.
He make 10, bro. He make 10.
Exactly. They'll be able to replace him with a much younger, you know, wing that can for that money. So they have a lot of things going for them. It's just you have to eat this season. Harden, it came in out of shape, and I don't know if it's his hammy or whatever, but he's just not physically, was not well this whole season, and it's not changing. But here's the light at the end of the tunnel with Harden. Harden is much bigger than Chris Paul. He's a much better scorer than Chris Paul. Even in this washed state, he can do much more than Chris Paul can scoring the ball. And as you can see, Chris Paul is the second best player on a team that wins 65 games. He is the second best player. Many people say he's the best player, but I mean, we both know he is the second best player on a team that is a championship contender, Chris Paul, right? You don't think James Harden, if you believe Embiid is really that guy, if your front office GM can really build a roster that will complement the skill set, I just don't see how you can be upset with James Harden being your second best player and Chris Paul is the second best player of a championship team. Like, I just don't see how you can really be upset with that because they both have the same shortcomings in the playoffs and one is just clearly better than the other, right? And he's younger, right? And he has a game that could actually age better if he just took himself seriously in the offseason. So
that's what that is where I was going. Chris Paul is insane about his fitness and nutrition. Like, he's keto or vegan. Mm-hmm. Does it like we like what Harden does in the offseason is well documented. I think somebody put it best. He's just he's like Charles Barkley. Like, I'll play my way into shape. Like, that's what Barkley. I'll get here, whatever, how I get here, and I'll play my way into shape, and I'll get going by the second half of the season. The thing is, we do that with a hamstring, you can never get yourself going when you get hurt. That's always the issue. The thing is, Harden had amazed me all those years because Harden has been a tank for almost a decade now. That was like the crazy part. Like, I remember watching this, like, he's big, out of shape. He would never get hurt. And then these last couple of years, man, it just started to happen. And you can't play yourself with a shape if you're not playing, right? So it just looks real bad when he plays. Like, I just think right now, I know a lot of people don't believe in the Raptors because they don't have that quote unquote that guy. But I'm telling you, of all the matchups that the San Francisco could pull in the first round, that's one of the worst. Because he just, I know Harden likes to get screens to give himself advantages. He won't be able to with that team. It's going to be 4, 6, 8 switchable guys and a big out there. And Beats will have to average 37, 38 points a game for him to win that series. Harden's just not going to have them. Right now, that's who they're starting to play. I think that's like the worst possible matchup. And all it takes is a couple, you know, hot shooting Flair Van Fleet games, which he's very shown he's capable of. And then all of a sudden, you down 3-2, going to Toronto in game 6. And, you know, the jokes, we make jokes, but the stats are the stats. We have seen Harden in those back-to-the-wall situations. And at 99% of the time, it has not been pretty. So, like, if they lose in the first round, if they play Toronto, I'm going to pick Toronto. Like, the only team I would pick them to beat is the Bulls if they get that matchup. Every other team, I'll pick the other team right now, looking at the East, in that top 6, which is where they're going to end up. They finish top 2, I'll pick them over the play-in team. But 3 through 6, I would pick those teams, any team except the Bulls over the 76ers.
Yeah, I mean, the Celtics have Embiid's number.
That's what I was going to say. They got Horford for that reason.
I might take the – nah, because even somehow there was some weird way where they drew the Heat for some reason. Like, even if there was some weird way that happened, Spo would dial up some defense to give Harden hell. So, yeah, you know, it's tough. But, you know, the thing with Harden – and I think we've said this every year now for like how many seasons? He just has to take himself seriously, his body, because it's really not a skill set problem with Harden. That's the thing with Harden; it's not a skill set problem.
Never has been.
It's not like he can't shoot from the mid range. It's not like he doesn't have a floater in his. It's not like he doesn't have these things. It's like he doesn't care to incorporate that, and he doesn't care to put his body in shape to consistently do these things. Like that's his problem. So when he decides to actually get into some shape, maintain year-round shape, maintain year-round drills and year-round work on his game so that he can be in game shape year-round, and he comes in next year with the mindset that we can win a championship because we have a great team and I want to work, then the Sixers will be where they need to be because Harden can easily give you 25 and 12 and Embiid score 30. And all of a sudden, that's a problem. Team, when you have Harden give you 25-12, you got Embiid giving you 30, you got Maxey giving you almost, you know, maybe give you 20 next year, and you got a bunch of nice little 3-and-D guys that, you know, Morey's probably, you know, Morey's going to poach from around the league in the offseason. Like, that's going to be a problem. That's going to be a big problem. So, like I told Tony, it's on Harden, bro, because the recipe to win is there. He's going to get his coach in the offseason. It's on Harden, bro. It's on Harden to finally take winning seriously. Like, he has to just take winning seriously. Like, that's just what it comes down to. He doesn't take winning seriously. So he has to just sit down and take winning seriously and understand for his team to win, they need him. Can't ride on somebody else's coattails. He has to be the one to do it, and he has to take that serious. That's just what it comes down to.
There it is. Make sure you guys follow and subscribe to Pod. Drop feedback. I'm sure 76er fans will be delighted after hearing Kings paint that rosy picture for them. They're going to be hyped.
It's good on paper. It's good on paper.
Right. Make sure you follow at It's Kings, bro, on Twitter. Myself, JJMaples55_MST. Give us feedback. Anything you want to hear us talk about, we will be back Wednesday live on Spotify Green Room. Please join us. We will see you then. And we are out of here.
Peace out.